Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. Ian, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Nice to see you today. Today, we're going to be talking about an issue which no one will agree with us because it's one of the most divisive issues in the entire world. The question of Israel, specifically whether or not there can be peace in the Middle East. And we know that it's impossible for us to find a perfect solution for peace in the Middle East. We're just going to be doing our best this morning to provide an objective, perhaps maybe a little bit biased towards personal liberty, but an objective analysis of what's happening with Israel, because so many things are blowing up all over the place, and maybe I shouldn't use the phrase blowing up. But John Kerry made some very controversial remarks suggesting that Israel might become an apartheid state, and now he's being pummeled by people like Ted Cruz and Republicans who claim that he said that Israel was an apartheid state. No, he didn't say that Israel was an apartheid state. He said that Israel could become an apartheid state. And we conducted a poll yesterday at the Libertarian Republic to just ask the general question of whether or not our listeners readers support the state of Israel. While I pull up those numbers, Ian, would you mind just giving us a brief overview of what apartheid means and a little bit of the context of what that is?
Sure. Apartheid is a reference to the Jim Crow-like system of white-ruled South Africa in the 90s, which existed until Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress took over in South Africa. Now, it's important to note here, Kerry did not say, I'm inclined to think that Israel could become an apartheid state. He said, look, if we have a unitary state, meaning that both Israel, both the nations of Israel and Palestine, the cultural entities that we describe with those words, exist under one central government, then either it's not going to be Jewish because you're going to have all of these Palestinian Muslims and Christians voting in these elections, or it's going to be an apartheid state. And now let me just play devil's advocate here, quite literally, I think, since we're talking about John Kerry. This is what Ehud Barak, Israel's defense minister, said in 2010. As long as in this territory west of the Jordan River, there is only one political entity called Israel, it's going to be either non-Jewish or non-democratic. If this block of millions of Palestinians cannot vote, that will be an apartheid state. So, was it smart of John Kerry, the Secretary of State? You know, this is his job. Was it smart to use a word like apartheid when talking about a country who we have an important relationship with? Probably not. But was it anti-Semitic? I mean, was Ehud Barak's comment anti-Semitic? I think Ted Cruz's reaction was a little bit melodramatic. And really what Kerry was saying was these are the physical possibilities. There is no other possibility. Right. If there's another possibility, someone tell me.
Right.
If there's a unitary state, it's just simple truth. Either it won't be Jewish, or you will have to have some sort of system where the Palestinians living in the state are deprived of the right to vote by virtue of being Palestinians. And that, so that is akin to something like what existed in South Africa.
Okay, and so for those of us who aren't familiar with Middle Eastern politics, and certainly Ian and I are not Middle East foreign policy experts, we simply are, you know, fans of history, so we've read a bit about this. Now, the West Bank, when we're talking about the West Bank, Israel, during the 1967 wars, Israel was pushed back some of the borders of their country, and the West Bank is what is known as the Gaza Strip, is an area where Palestinian Arabs exist there's a wall between them and Israel, and basically these people live in a very small, tiny strip of land. They're pushed up against the Dead Sea, is that correct? correct?
Right, you're thinking of the Gaza Strip.
The Gaza Strip, excuse me. So tell me, Ian, the issue here with these people is that they want a separate Palestinian state, correct?
Right.
And the issue of whether or not there would be a separate Palestinian state is the question whether the people on the Gaza Strip would have their own state in the Gaza Strip, just a tiny little nation that would be comprised of the Gaza Strip, which I believe is like, what, 8 miles long? It's just it's a tiny, tiny little spot.
Well, often when people talk about a two-state solution, mm-hmm. what they're getting at is that Israel would be one state, and then Gaza Strip and the West Bank would comprise another state.
Okay, so can you give us a quick little geography lesson of what exactly the layout is on this, Ian? Do you know?
Sure. Well, you have, obviously, the West Bank in the west. Israel divides the West Bank mm-hmm. and the Gaza Strip in okay. the east, which is up against the sea.
Right.
So you have, if we are to count those two geographical entities as one cultural nation, mm-hmm. Palestine, okay. then you have Israel splitting it down the middle.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So, and here's the question. Now, we did a poll yesterday at the Libertarian Republic just to ask people if they generally support the state of Israel or not. And I left the questions a little bit open because, again, I think you're never going to make everybody happy with a perfect poll when it comes to this. But I wanted to get a sense of how people just felt, our listeners felt about the state of Israel. And the reason I brought it up is because yesterday in the Senate, Rand Paul introduced a bill called the Stand With Israel Act of 2014. Now that's just going to piss off people like Jennifer Rubin just incredibly, because she's dying to paint Rand Paul as an anti-Semite. But let's start with our poll, and then let's talk about what Rand Paul has proposed and a little bit why we think that's pretty clever what he did, even if it makes some libertarians angry. Take a listen to this poll. So I asked four different types of questions about the Israel issue and how people support it, how they feel about the state of Israel. And I got some interesting results. So the question was very general: do you support Israel? And the four answers that you could give were, number one, yes, unequivocally; two, no, and I don't care what happens to them; three, I support the Jewish people, but not the government of Israel; and four, no, and I wish they never existed. So these four answers, these are basically two types of yes and two types of no's. The first one is yes unequivocally, which means that you support them rain or come shine, no matter what. Most likely you would be for foreign aid, for example. And the second yes is I support the Jewish people, but not the government of Israel. That question is basically saying, yes, I support the Israelis' right to exist, but I don't support their government. And maybe these are libertarians who don't support foreign aid to Israel. And then the two no answers were no, and I don't care what happens to them, and no, and I wish they never existed. The first no is more of an isolationist no. No, and I don't care what happens in the Middle East. It's none of my problem. And the second no is no, and I wish they never existed, denotes ill will, meaning I wish they never existed, meaning I wish there never was a Jewish state. I think that the troublemakers, this tends to be somebody who's hostile. And the way that this broke down was that 41.6% of our readers said that they unequivocally support Israel, right? And the second place was, I support the Jewish people, but not the government of Israel. That's 34.9%. So most people are in the yes camp, they support Israel. And in the no camp, 16.2% of people said they are more isolationist, they know and they don't care what happens. And 7.3%, a minority of people, said that they wish they never existed.
Right, so the more supportive an answer was, the more our readers were likely to choose it. So mm-hmm. our readers are generally supportive of Israel. Now, I'd be interested to see a more detailed breakdown at some point. Maybe we'll have to revisit this topic with mm-hmm. another poll, because mm-hmm. I think, for instance, Ashley Ray Goldenberg, who has written for the Libertarian Republic before, certainly would have chosen the answer yes unequivocally.
You think so?
Yeah, definitely. I think she's a strong hardline supporter of Israel as it exists, mm-hmm. but she also is opposed to sending foreign aid to Israel, for example, and doesn't mm-hmm. think America should be in an entangling alliance with Israel.
Yeah, you'd have to ask the specific question, you know, do you support them unequivocally? But, you know, if you, in my understanding, if you say unequivocally, it means that you will do everything you can, including fund them. So it's again, this is not easy to kind of suss out the details of this because there's so many nuanced opinions on this issue.
Well, take a look, everyone, if you get a chance at, it was a piece that Ashley Ray Goldenberg wrote for Rare where she's talking about how she thinks Israel would be stronger if it didn't receive American foreign aid, mm-hmm. and she actually quotes from some prominent Israeli politicians mm-hmm. in support of her position. Mm-hmm. So you could support Israel and its leadership and oppose American foreign aid.
Well, and a lot of Israeli leadership has stated that they don't need American foreign aid. They think it's more trouble than it's worth. And it's right. not just Ashley Ray Goldenberg and libertarians who have these nuanced opinions on Israel and the Middle East. Now, there's a fantastic interview that came from 1978 that we posted along with the poll. So if you go to the libertarianrepublic.com and you want to see the poll and you can participate, you'll be able to see an interview with Benjamin Netanyahu when he was 28 years old, 1978, and he was discussing the question of a two-state solution for Israel. And he was talking about the idea of Israel's relationship with the United States and it not being a two-way street. And it basically, he was arguing that the people who see that Israel is sort of like a welfare queen and dependent on the United States, he disagrees with that and argues that the United States gets a major benefit from having a stable democracy in the Middle East. Now, the people who responded no and they don't care what happens to Israel probably don't see, you know, having Israel, you know, a stable democracy in the Middle East as some benefit to the United States. I think I would disagree, and I would disagree with that for national security reasons, mostly because I think that the fact that the Israelis are looking out for their own self-interest in defending themselves from hostile nations surrounding them, 21 hostile nations surrounding the state of Israel, most likely because of their status as allies with the United States, probably adds a tremendous security benefit to the United States. I'm not saying that that means that we need to be subsidizing them. But what I am saying is that we, even if we weren't subsidizing them, the presence of an Israeli state there most likely provides for the security of the United States. Now, to play devil's advocate for that, Ian, you have to remember that the reason that Osama bin Laden stated that he attacked us was for two reasons. One of the reasons was because of a base that we put in 1991 in Saudi Arabia, which they saw as an affront to their religion, an American base in the Holy Land, which allowed him to recruit suicide terrorists to kill us on 9/11. And then the second reason that he gave us was because of our support for Israel. Now, the problem is that I don't believe that even if we withdrew our financial support from Israel, that they would see that as enough of a withdrawal of support for Israel, because Americans, by and large, even libertarians, especially our own audience, I think morally support the state of Israel. So I think if you watch Benjamin Netanyahu's debate from 1978, if you consider yourself someone who doesn't care about the state of Israel, or maybe you see yourself as hostile to the state of Israel, I would urge you to watch that debate from 1978 with Netanyahu. And I think he does a fantastic job arguing about why he believes there shouldn't be a new Palestinian state. And basically he says that is because there would be a 22nd Arab state and a second Palestinian state, because he argues that Jordan is a Palestinian state. It already is a Palestinian state. And so the question is why should he create another Palestinian state at the expense of the only Jewish one? Because it would make 22 Palestinian states, or excuse me, 22 Arab states and a second Palestinian state at the expense of the one Jewish one. Now,
okay, well, there's a few points to respond to there. Go ahead. Well, first of all, I think, yeah, the healthy relationship is to recognize that we are distinct nations with distinct interests mm-hmm. that don't unilaterally overlap, but we have overlapping interests, and we should work together on the areas where our interests collide. I think we should not underestimate the role of American troops in Saudi Arabia in helping al-Qaeda recruit mm-hmm. and in generating that blowback. I think that was really the straw that broke the camel's back and was seen by bin Laden, and more importantly, by the followers he was able to recruit, as an occupation of Muslim Holy Land and a direct slap in the face to Islam as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my question to Netanyahu would be like, well, you know, what else do you want to do? You could, I suppose you could organize some sort of repatriation where you would send all of these people to other countries. That's something else you could do. But you can't just indefinitely have these two populations coexisting under one unitary authority. That's just not viable. Well, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, why couldn't they all just become members of the State of Israel? Why not just...
It wouldn't be a Jewish state.
Well, it would be a Jewish state. There would still be a major. There would still be a lot of Jews in Israel. But the issue is whether or not you taking all these Palestinian Arabs would change the demographics of Israel.
It wouldn't be characteristically Jewish. I don't think that any strong supporter of Israel is really going to go for that because Israel was founded specifically as a state for Judaism and Jewish
culture.
Yes,
but they can't enforce birthing
issues.
You're
going to have this huge block of Palestinian Muslims, Palestinian Christians voting in the Israeli government. It just wouldn't work out well for anyone. I think, actually, really the source of this ethnic conflict and a lot of ethnic conflicts is you have groups with irreconcilable interests that are stuck under one unitary authority, and they can't really manage their own internal affairs.
Here's the thing, though, Ian.
That's a problem for Israelis. It's a problem for Palestinians.
The reason why I think that people may be a little bit short-sighted about it, Israel remaining a Jewish state if Palestine were subsumed in the State of Israel, is because, remember, when you add human rights into the equation, there's a little interesting thing that happens with demographics. All of a sudden, birth rates go down. And not in a bad way. Birth rates go down when you introduce the same equal human rights to females that you receive in Western countries. So what happens is that the more educated your females become in a country, the lower the birth rates are. And so people may think, oh, well, you know, the Arabs are going to be breeding like crazy because their birth rates are so high right now. But if you introduce Western secular values of traditional educational programs for women equal to men, then the birth rates go down. So people, I think, sometimes they tend to look at demographics and they freak out and they think, oh, well, you know, we'll be taken over by this population. But what happens a lot of times is that when populations are subsumed into other populations, they tend to take on those qualities. And certainly, you know, adding human rights into this equation, I think, would lower the birth rate of Arabs.
Sure. Well, first of all, even the best case scenario there, like I said before, you'd still have this large block voting in Israeli elections, and that would not work out well for people who wish for Israel to be a distinctly Jewish state.
Maybe not, but I mean, again, they deserve
secondly,
those rights.
I think even if you did politically integrate the whole region, then Muslims would still continue to practice Muslim culture, and I don't want to impose another culture upon them. If they wish to do that, then they have a right to.
But there are already Arab Jews, there are already Arabs who live in Israel, who practice their culture, who have those human rights, who have the rights to vote, who participate in democracy and are part of the culture. So that already exists within Israel at the moment. And I think, you know, the question is whether or not you think that, you know, it's a big deal whether you are outnumbered in terms of demographics. I mean, if you're some sort of, like, you know, cultural supremacist, then maybe that's important to you that you maintain numbers, like numerical superiority over the culture which you're trying to perhaps distinguish yourself from. And, you know, that's a lot of people in the United States, they say, well, you know, white people aren't going to be the majority for very long. You know, Mexicans and blacks and people like that are going to have, you know, by 2025, they're going to have numerical superiority. Well, so what? You know, I mean, unless, of course, you are a Zionist Israeli who says, you know, well, we want to maintain numerical superiority in our own country. Well, that's fine.
Well,
you know,
let's set aside for just a moment the question of whether wanting Israel to be a distinctly Jewish state is moral. That's just the way it is. If you're looking for a pragmatic solution and a way to advance peace, you are not going to convince descriptively people who are strong supporters of Israel to abandon Israel being a Jewish state.
Right.
That's what the creation of Israel was all about.
Nobody's saying that they're abandoning that, but you cannot change demographics without necessarily institute some sort of one child for all for this population. So again, unless you believe in some sort of eugenicist program, you have to deal with demographics as they lie. The Bible says, be fruitful and multiply. So you can't say that it's okay for one group of people to be fruitful and multiply and the other group not to be
fruitful. They wouldn't necessarily need to do something like eugenics. They could just you know, do essentially what they currently do and just favor people who are Jewish in their immigration policy. They could do something like that.
Yes, which they do. Now, and that's a totally different issue. But I'd like to discuss Rand Paul's bill. He introduces the Stand With Israel Act of 2014, because I think that you touched on this earlier, that he has done something very sneaky here and put himself in a very interesting position of being both pro-Israel and against foreign aid.
I don't know if it's sneaky, but it's politically smart, because people who oppose Rand Paul's bill will be opposing the Stand With Israel bill.
How do you figure?
And people who, you know, are concerned about Rand Paul's opposition to foreign aid are generally concerned about eliminating foreign aid to Israel. Mm-hmm. So this is a nice sort of gateway drug, a way for Paul to say, look, here's an opportunity where we can agree on ending foreign aid.
It's very short. Let me just read the text of the bill real quick, and then let's debate it. Senator Rand Paul introduced the Stand With Israel Act of 2014. The legislation halts all U.S. aid to the Palestinian government until they agree to a ceasefire and recognize the right of Israel to exist. The text reads, prohibition on foreign assistance, A, in general, except as provided under subsection and notwithstanding any other provision of law, no amounts may be obligated or expended to provide any direct U.S. assistance, loan guarantee, or debt relief to the Palestinian Authority or any affiliated governing entity or leadership organization. So basically, you know, no money to Hamas or Fatah either. The exception is, the prohibition under subsection shall have no effect for a fiscal year if the president certifies to Congress during that fiscal year that the Palestinian Authority has, this is their six issues here. One, they must formally recognize the right of Israel to exist as a Jewish state. They must publicly recognize the state of Israel. Three, they must renounce terrorism. Four, they must purge all individuals with terrorist ties from security services and terminate funding of anti-American and anti-Israel incitement. Five, publicly pledge not to engage in war with Israel and honor previous diplomatic agreements. All sounds very reasonable.
Austin, you mentioned a minute ago some libertarians might have criticisms of this, and I'd like to speak to those for just a minute.
Go ahead.
Libertarians might be want to say, well, here Rand Paul is proposing sort of meddling in foreign affairs, but in fact, think about the two possible outcomes should this bill pass. One, we would have a more peaceful situation in the Middle East, and the status quo in terms of American spending would continue. Mm-hmm. That's an unlikely outcome.
Right.
Or we would reduce the scope of government here in the United States and send less foreign aid overseas. Mm-hmm. Those are the two possible outcomes, and neither of those outcomes is the government or its power or its scope expanded.
Mm-hmm.
So this is certainly something libertarians should favor. Rand Paul is good at coming up with pragmatic ways to cut back the scope of government and get other people on board.
Well, I said it was sneaky earlier because I think that people like Jennifer, his enemies, people like Jennifer Rubin or even perhaps Ted Cruz are waiting around to pounce on Senator Rand Paul for possibly appearing anti-Israel, because I think that the one of the accusations leveled at his father, Ron Paul, was that he was an anti-Semite. Now, they labeled him an anti-Semite for ridiculous reasons.
Oh, so, man. Ron Paul was debating Ben Stein once on blowback, and Ron Paul was just explaining the concept of blowback, and Ben Stein said that was anti-Semitic. They weren't even talking about Israel. Those accusations crazy.
Again, because there are people who are just waiting to jump on somebody to call them anti-Semitic because they wanted to use that to undermine their opponents.
Right. The reason I said it wasn't sneaky is I think it's really radically honest. Mm-hmm. What Rand Paul is doing is saying, here are my principles. I'm being honest about these firm principles that I have, mm-hmm. but look at the way that I can apply them in a pragmatic way and in a collaborative way where I can work together with people who don't always agree with me.
Well, it's sneaky because he's breaking the paradigm in a way that is yes, it's transparent, but he's doing it in a way that no one recognizes that the paradigm is being broken. So I guess maybe sneaky isn't the right word to do it, but it's certainly revolutionary for him to do it in such a way.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. It's revolutionary because typically, if you are a conservative who is hesitant about cutting foreign aid, you're concerned about Israel's security, and here is a way Rand Paul is saying, look, we can unequivocally advance Israel's security mm-hmm. by actually cutting back on the scope of government and cutting foreign aid.
Right. And, the question of Israel is a touchy one for everyone because, to me, it seems like people just can't be objective about this, that they can't because, obviously there's partisans for either side. There's the people who support, Arabs, their right to have a separate state. And there are people who absolutely support Israel. And then, somebody brings up the question of the Holocaust, Ted Cruz brought up the Holocaust when he was saying that John Kerry's comments made him anti-Semitic, which I think is just absolutely disingenuous. And The problem, I think, just lies in the fact that there are that no one is really having a debate that is that tries to come up with an objective solution. And again, I don't like to give John Kerry, you know, much praise or credit, but what he said was true, factually true. Yep. And so you have to even if somebody is your opponent, even if you disagree with them.
If we want to come up with a solution, we have to have a reasoned discussion.
We have to have a reasoned discussion.
Don't just call someone like anti-Semitic or any other of the panoply of slurs that people use to shut down debate. If you do that, right. You're not going to come to, you know, a more practical alternative way to approach the issue.
Exactly. And I think that the question is that if you really truly support the state of Israel, what means do you think that you can use to achieve the ends? And first of all, what are your ends? But what means do you think are, if you're a libertarian, what ends means do you think are practical to use to get whatever your ends are? So, for example, I believe that Rand Paul supports the Jewish people and the state of Israel. And so I think that he's introduced what I think is a very libertarian-ish measure here.
No, I think it's strictly libertarian. There is no non-libertarian outcome of the bill.
Yes, I agree. I mean, the problem is that if you're a strict non-interventionist, this is still statecraft in a sense. And I mean,
but it's not intervention because either the status quo continues, mm-hmm. and there is in no way an expansion of government. Right. And again, that's unlikely because it's unlikely True. That the Palestinians are going to agree to all these things, right. or the scope of government is reduced.
Okay, but here he is. He's saying that no amounts may be obligated or expended to provide any direct United States assistance. Okay, you know, he's blocking aid. You know what I mean? So he's not saying it's okay to issue aid if they do it. He's just saying that he's blocking aid for this. Now, here's the thing, and the problem is the reality is on the ground when you're looking at the question of purging all individuals with terrorist ties from security services. Well, you're never going to do that because just like in Afghanistan, the people who were your enemies before become the government because they eventually perhaps renounce their terrorist ways and then right. they become the government. You know, like what was the guy, PLO leader,
just hypothetically, he could mean current terrorist ties.
Current terrorist ties. But I mean, the problem is that you've got like, you know, in Egypt, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood, when Morsi was ousted, the Egyptian Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, excuse me, mm-hmm. they were terrorists before they became a political party. And in order for there to be a legitimate governing structure in the state of Egypt, they had to become a legitimized public party. And, you know, Hamas and Fatah right now, they've actually just built a coalition together to put together a Palestinian government. But, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, Hamas, Fatah, these guys were the terrorists.
Yeah.
And so I think that...
Well, not to mention they were killing each other not too long ago.
That's true. Well, yes.
Hamas and Fatah were, and now they formed a coalition.
Now they formed a coalition, so things have changed. But the issue here is that Rand Paul, I think, even though he is trying his best here, he's put he's saying, purge all individuals with terrorist ties, terminate funding of anti-American, blah, 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 renounce terrorism. So the issue here is that he's saying, he's pushed something that I think is a little bit unrealistic. Maybe it's, you know, it is a good step in the right direction, but it sort of negates the reality of how modern governance works.
Sure, like I said, it's unlikely these demands will be met, but if they were met, it would be a good thing. And if they're not met and aid is cut, assuming this bill is passed, that would be a good thing as well.
Without a doubt.
This is a win.
I'm nitpicking yeah. here, mm-hmm. and the reason is it because I think that people would accuse us of being a little bit too, we're the Rand Paul partisans.
Yeah.
And
now let me just say something nice about Ted Cruz.
Go ahead.
Because we've been criticizing him. Of course John Kerry should resign. Of course we should call for John Kerry to resign. I don't know that necessarily one word that he used that was not a smart word mm-hmm. for the Secretary of State to use about another country we have an important relationship with. That maybe isn't the reason he should resign, but sure, call for him to resign for trampling on the Fourth Amendment or any number of other terrible things that he's done.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll leave it on a high point like that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. If you like our show, subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can get us on Stitcher. There's an application for your Android device. You can go to Stitcher.com, download the application. That way you can get us every single day. And if you really like us, send us your email. Go to thelibertarianrepublic.com. Today is actually the last day that you can sign up, enter to win a replica of George Washington's flintlock pistol. So if you give us your email today, you'll be entered and the last chance for a drawing for our first president, our founding father, George Washington's flintlock pistol that he carried during the Revolutionary War. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to us. Send us your ideas for podcasts. Do you like the podcast? Do you hate it? Send us an email. Go to thelibertarianrepublic.com on the front page. You can see a little send us a tip button. Send us some mail. Tell us what you think. Do you have some guest suggestions? Tomorrow's podcast will be an interesting discussion with Kathy Reisenowitz. She's coming by today. She seems to have recanted some of her views, or perhaps she says that she's been a feminist that was a little too bossy. But we're not trying to ban bossy here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not trying to ban anything. We're for freedom. We're for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.